Welcome to yet another episode. I am your host, Jose, joined by my co-host, Kyle.
What's up, everybody?
And today we're going to be talking about some of the most exciting and underrated players from every MLB team. And so kind of just to, start it off, we're going to kind of go back and forth. So I'll say a team and Kyle will say your team. We're going to go based off AL NL. So I've got the AL and Kyle's got the NL. And so we'll kind of just go back and forth. Kind of just to start it off. My first team, I'm kind of just going to go completely in order. My first team is going to be Ryan Mountcastle from the Orioles. He's 2 years into his big league career. I know that he's kind of started within the COVID 60 game, restriction and stuff like that. So he actually did get Rookie of the Year votings twice. He got eighth place in 2020 and he got sixth place in 2021. But besides that, I mean, in the last two seasons, he's hit over 55 home runs, which is more than Anthony Rizzo, Freddie Freeman, Jose Abreu, Josh Bell, and a lot of other first basemen. This is despite everything that's happened in Camden Yards, which is they changed the fence.
They brought the fence.
They moved it back. Right? Yeah. Or they moved it back. Yeah. And so in, over those last two seasons as well, he's hit .253 with a .307 and .455 slash over those last 2 years. And he's ranked in the 96th percentile in slugging percentage in the last season. He's also improved his defending. He's obviously become a lot better defender in the last two seasons. And his ultimate average has also improved quite a bit. So for the Orioles, I got to say that my underrated player has got to be Ryan Mountcastle.
Yeah, I completely agree there. Kind of staying in the East and moving to another young team that's trying to get out there and prove themselves, the Miami Marlins. The Miami Marlins have a lot of young talent out there, and just picking one of the guys, I'm going to go with outfielder Brian De La Cruz. I think they may have something here in him. His free swing led to a very slow start last season, but his expected WOBA skyrocketed as the season went on and progressed. He can also control his base running game with a cannon in right field. Although he isn't a great defender yet, his arm will definitely pick some guys off trying to take another base. He seems to fit in there in that lineup to be a 25 home run threat guy for sure. And not a lot of people are talking about them. I know the Marlins are lacking in their lineup with that star power, and he definitely could be one of the guys that that steps up and does that. So if you're looking for a diamond in the rough with Fangraph projections for this upcoming season, there's an article that Brian De La Cruz projects to be slightly below average regular in 2023, even while being an above average hitter who can pop around 15 home runs, playing in about 120 games. His Statcast rankings and quality of contact suggest that his very conservative projection, especially if he improves defensively going forward, he could be easily being a league average player in 2023 with a chance to break out and become one of the best outfielders in the game. And he definitely has a cannon on him. So when you're looking at the Marlins and that young crop of talent they have there, Brian De La Cruz is somebody to watch out for.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess we're just going to stay in the East. I got the Rays. I have Harold Ramirez. He split time between first base, corner outfield, and DH. I am so sorry for the dog. He batted .343 and .404 slash with a .119 OPS plus in just 435 plate appearances. His batted ball number suggests he could just do more with, obviously a more consistent role. And now that they traded G-Man Choi, I believe, to the Pirates, he's going to have that, regular playing time and such. He's projected to have about a .280 this next season, which is still ranked in the 94th percentile for this next season. He has a 16.6% strikeout rate, which speaks a lot to, you know, who he is as a hitter and the way that he's available to, you know, obviously the ability to hit for a higher average, of course. I think he's going to be up there with the WAR leaders of the team, which I believe last season it was Yandy Diaz for the Rays. So I think that, you know, he's going to be one of those WAR leaders for sure on that Rays team.
Yeah, staying in the East, going up to the nation's capital in D.C. We've seen what this guy has done so far in the WBC, so just going to throw it out there. First baseman, Joey Meneses. He absolutely raked last year. He was an underrated guy coming out in his rookie season, and he was hands down the best hitter on the Nationals roster in the second half of the season. He put up a 930 OPS in about over 240 plate appearances, and he had a 47.1% hard hit rate, which was well above the MLB average. Meneses was simply an all-around beast at the plate in his short rookie campaign. There's a good chance that he could possibly regress in this upcoming season. He deserves a lot of credit for one of the best rookie campaigns in the season while playing for the low-ranked Nationals, a team that is starting to rebuild a bit. Every single metric you can look at shows Meneses as an above hitter, but the league may adjust, and he could struggle with more time being spent and more video and scouting reports coming out on him. But still, as of now, he figures to be in the heart of that Nationals lineup every day, giving their rebuild and what they're doing in D.C. While he's almost certainly not going to produce the insane numbers he did and has so far this WBC, he looks like he can be a good MLB at-bat that's going to stay at that level, which the Nationals don't have many of at this time after kind of trading all those away, or guys leaving via free agency or retiring. So hopefully he continues to rake and makes the big league team and dominates for after a decade in the minor leagues and what we've seen so far in the WBC with Team Mexico.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, kind of before I go into the next player, I think that it was, I didn't even know who Joey Meneses was besides when I know he came out in MLB The Show. He had that card that they gave him for, I believe, like, the monthly rewards or whatever. Mm-hmm. So hearing his name, I was like, you know, just another card player or whatever. And then I didn't even know that he was a 30-year-old rookie. He was 30 years old.
Right.
And, you know, like you said, that it's projected that he's going to digress. He's obviously not going to hit, you know, obviously have those same projections, that same slash line, whatever it may be. But I mean, just in the WBC alone, like he's kept it up pretty good, mm-hmm. in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I forgot who our starting pitcher was for the WBC for the U.S. that day. But
Bueno, right? Oh, no, that was Mexico. No. Nick Martinez. Padres.
Oh, yes. Nick Martinez. It's not like Nick Martinez is some single-A, you know, rookie.
Right.
So, obviously, he's still hitting the ball really well, and he's seen it pretty well. So, I don't think he's going to have the exact same slash line, but I do think that he's going to be able to prove that, you know, he belongs, you know, in the league.
Right. And going off of that, like, regardless if this is spring training or not, him still putting up these numbers during the WBC is just giving the Nationals a bigger sample size on, hey, this guy could crack our roster. He's getting this recognition now. This guy may start to sell tickets, and it's a feel-good story with him being the age he is and being able to crack the big league roster for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess now to kind of just go into the next player. For the Red Sox, I actually have Chris Martin. For Chris Martin, the Red Sox last year, they had the second worst ERA for the bullpen. Their bullpen ERA was a 4.59, which I don't know if the worst was either the Angels or someone else, but I don't know, man. You know, watching all those Angels games, definitely felt like we had a pretty bad bullpen. But kind of just to kind of go more into it, Chris Martin was with the Dodgers, I believe, this last season. He did get traded, or no, he signed with the Red Sox, and he posted a 1.46 with the Dodgers when he was with them. And I think that the Red Sox are really going to use Chris Martin as who they thought, you know, Matt Barnes was going to be for them. And I know, I think Matt Barnes really kind of struggled last season. So I think that they're really going to rely on Chris Martin to be that kind of setup guy in those close games. So, yeah.
Yeah, going on to another guy I've been high on for a while. It's one of those guys that he came up and cracked a big league team and just hasn't been able to show off yet, and that's for the Phillies, third baseman Alec Bohm. Hopefully we can see a breakout in him. He has pretty poor defense, but that aside, if Bohm takes a few more walks and can cut down his chase a little bit, he's likely going to be a nice surprise on an already loaded Phillies offense with Bryce Harper, Kyle Schwarber, Rhys Hoskins. He's still slated to be their starting third baseman after all, even after acquiring Trey Turner, who's going to slide in at shortstop. A guy that his stat cast shows potential is next to is kind of like Max Muncy. And while Muncy is certainly likely for a bounce back year after his poor season, where you can't really call Max Muncy overrated in the slightest, he's expected to explode on the scene a few years ago. So after comparing Bohm and Muncy, Bohm is likely the last piece the Phillies need to step up for them to make a World Series run again this upcoming season. He's never going to be Mike Schmidt or anything like that, and you can't put that kind of pressure on him, or not Scott Rowland like type of guy, but there's a chance he could be an above average hitter. And if you look at some of the projections on where he's supposed to be at, he's a guy that's going to hit hopefully 10 to 20 home runs this season, batting right above 275, 280, and with a 720 OPS. So hopefully he can add a little bit more of a walk to his game, and that'll get some runners on. Even if he's not the guy that's driving in the runs, the Phillies lineup is certainly capable of doing that. So it's just kind of like just getting on base for Alec Bohm. So hopefully he's one of the guys to watch for the Phillies this season, so they can try and push back and get back to the World Series.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he didn't do horrible in the postseason, but I do know that he had a 2.24 average with a 2.29 on base percentage and a 6.54 on OPS. So, I think he's just young. I think that he really just needs that, you know, that time to really just grow. But I'm excited to see what he does this season for sure. To kind of just keep you going, someone that I'm kind of excited for, and I loved using his card in MLB The Show. He just got traded, well, not recently, but he got traded this offseason, was Dalton Varsho. He got traded from the Diamondbacks to the Toronto Blue Jays in exchange for Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and their young catcher, Gabriel Moreno. In a season with, you know, obviously with the Diamondbacks, he logged a 109 OPS plus with 29 doubles, 27 home runs, 74 RBIs, and in just 151 games. He did it playing in a home ballpark that ranked amongst the worst in hitting home runs for, you know, the Diamondbacks. He's 26 years old. 16 of his 27 home runs weren't even at home; they were on the road. Which I think that in a park like, you know, in Toronto, I think that he's definitely gonna probably hit 30 easily if he just gets that regular playing time. And he could play a wide variety of positions. I know that he could play catcher as well as outfield. So I think that really gives the Blue Jays a chance to really, you know, put him in a wide variety of places and, you know, just have him playing on a regular basis for sure.
Yeah. Moving to the Braves, and another guy they just acquired, catcher Sean Murphy. He's definitely one of the best catchers in the league defensively alone. He's up there. He's a fantastic catcher. He underperformed StatCast batted ball expectations in both 21 and 22. He's moving to an offense-neutral home park in SunTrust Field in Atlanta, and getting away from the second worst park for offense in baseball should allow him to move up his stat line and produce closer to expected in a positive way. He's in a much stronger lineup, so he's going to have a lot more opportunities with runners on base. Kind of takes the pressures off in him. When he was in Oakland, he was kind of like the guy. So he's going to get a few better pitches to see. The Braves gave up a half a dozen players to acquire Murphy. So he has 3 years on his contract, and I know they gave him an extension. So we'll see what he's going to be able to produce. Him getting to Well, he's going to start for sure over Travis d'Arnaud. So kind of like balancing those guys, maybe one slides in at the DH, but definitely Sean Murphy is a bat that the Braves are going to want to see in the lineup regularly. His defense alone is going to make up for the Braves an even better team than they already were. And acquiring Murphy also helps some of the on-field production that they lost with Dansby Swanson heading over to the Chicago Cubs. So Sean Murphy is one of the guys to watch for when you're looking at the Atlanta Braves for this upcoming season.
Yeah. And for me, the next guy I have is, I don't want to say his name wrong, but Wandy Peralta, he's the leader for the Yankees. And yeah, I mean, this guy's disgusting. I mean, his sinker changeup combo that just has hitters struggling. I mean, this changeup alone is one of the best pitches he has in baseball. And he's ranked sixth in run value on just that particular pitch alone. He threw it 347 times, which is the second least usage out of everyone. Let's see. His pitch mix, his usage is going to be about a 43% use in changeup, 37% use in sinker, and about 16% in slider. In that case, he's going to have, you know, pretty good success because of, you know, how much he uses all of his pitches. And just his rankings alone on you know, his different categories, the average exit velocity, he ranks 96th percentile. Hard hit percentage is 92nd percentile. Barrel percentage is 91 percentile. The whiff percentage is 92 percentile. And the slugging is about 94th percentile. So this is definitely a guy that, you know, this definitely, you know, look out for and, you know, be excited for. Because a lot of people were kind of comparing him to Zach Britton. So if they could get someone like, you know, a younger Zach Britton, or, you know, have him produce like Zach Britton once did, I think that's definitely something to be, you know, really excited for. So
yeah, definitely. Kind of wrapping up the East and moving to the other team in New York, the Mets. I think a guy to watch for on the Mets is going to be left fielder Mark Canha. And I think Mark Canha is one of the most underrated guys in Major League Baseball. He made the move over to the Mets prior to the 2022 season when he signed a free agent deal there, leaving the Oakland A's. Canha continued to perform at a high level offensively. He's now logged 5 straight seasons with a WRC plus marked at least 15% better than the league average. At a time when the depth of talent in left field is not particularly strong, that kind of production does stand out. Canha's signature skills, his ability to get on base. He definitely learned that just get on base, Billy Bean, Moneyball style of baseball when he was with Oakland. Going back to 2019, he walked once every 8.3 plate appearances, which was good enough for 20th best rate in MLB amongst those with at least 1,500 plate appearances in that span. So if you're looking at Mark Canha, it's a guy that is likely going to get his fair share of walks, is going to get on base, and he's going to be on there for their bigger guys like Pete Alonso, Francisco Lindor, and those guys to drive in some runs for the Mets this coming season.
Yeah, and kind of just to, I guess, transition over to the Central. For me, I have a guy who's not necessarily an everyday player, but I think that he should be, which is Eric Haas. I think that Eric Haas is someone that if he just got regular playing time, he's going to be really excited to watch. He does play catcher, but he could also play outfield. He ranks 7th in OPS with a 753. That's just below Sean Murphy's 764 in that span of the last 2 years. And just above Travis d'Arnaud's, which he's an all-star, he had a 749. You know, Haas had 25 home runs as a catcher over the last 2 years, which ranks 10th. But I think that if he just got that playing time and he just, you know, kept consistent at it and the Tigers just played him, I think that he definitely would be probably one of the better catchers in the game.
Yeah, definitely. Starting off things in the Central with the Cincinnati Reds, I'm sure Angel fans and Mariner fans and A's fans are kind of excited to see this guy leave the AL West, and that's Nick Solak. He's one of the guys that definitely tore up the division opponents, and was one of the Cincinnati Reds' most underrated acquisitions this offseason. The Reds have identified Solak as an outfielder heading into spring training this season, but the University of Louisville alum can also play several spots on the infield. We saw him play some infield, second base, third base when he was with the Texas Rangers. Solak might be in direct competition with former first-round pick Nick Senzel throughout spring training and even into the 2023 season. However, Nick Senzel is one of those guys in recent years that has been made of glass, and he always seems to find his time more on the IL than on the field. So Solak may win that battle by default. Solak does have a minor league option remaining, so if the Reds decided to add a player like Stuart Fairchild or Alejo Lopez to their opening day roster, the former second-round pick may well begin his 2023 campaign in AAA Louisville. I think he has a good shot of cracking the roster in 2023, and his versatility will help them in the big leagues with the Reds kind of in the rebuilding phase. The Reds' outfield depth, they acquired Will Myers this offseason, which is already questionable at best if that is your biggest free agent acquisition. If Fairchild, Senzel, even Myers struggle to get going in the right direction, Solak could be promoted to the majors really quickly if he doesn't crack the roster on opening day, which I suspect that he will do so. And so I'm glad to see him out of the division, and definitely Nick Solak is one of the guys to watch for heading into the Red season.
Yeah, and kind of just to continue for the Royals, I have Scott Barlow. This guy's among relievers that pitched at least 140 innings is 189 ERA plus, is pretty up there. The only guy that really beat him was Emmanuel Clase, which obviously that guy's disgusting. And that span, he posted a 230 ERA with 168 strikeouts and 40 saves, which, I mean, he has five two inning saves in that span, which is the most in MLB. Barlow had one of MLB's best chase rates in 37.2%, and opponent hard hit percentage was only 30.3%. His most used pitch was a slider that held opponents to a 189 average and a curveball that had opponents at a 138 average. So I think he's super underrated. I don't think many people are talking about Barlow, but I definitely think that, he's definitely probably going to, shine this next season. It's a young team, the Royals, so that's just so that they give him the chance to really shine.
Yeah, heading over to the Windy City of Chicago, heading into the Cubs at Wrigley Field. I have utility man Christopher Morel as a guy to watch for this upcoming season. The Cubs were a team that demanded lots of attention this winter, as they seemed to be interested in every high-end free agent. They didn't crush the offseason, but they did bring in Dansby Swanson, as well as numerous key contributors all over the field. With all the additions made, a player like Morel can kind of slide under the radar. Morel shouldn't be overlooked, as he put together one of the best seasons on the team the last season as a rookie. He really flashed a strong bat for someone of his stature, as he ranked in the 91st percentile of barreled ball rate in the league and consistently hit the ball very hard. While strikeouts were an issue that needed to be addressed this offseason, Morel clubbed his way to 16 home runs and a 108 WRC plus in 425 plate appearances. If he can make further adjustments against the breaking ball, he could definitely be in line for even more offensive production this coming season. He is far from an elite defender, but his speed and versatility will continue to provide value for the Cubs moving forward. With Swanson and Nico Horner locked up in the middle infield and Cody Bellinger set to start in center field, Morel will likely have a chance to earn a regular role at third base and or as a fourth outfielder on the team, kind of as a bench piece. He doesn't have the makeup of a star hitter, but his bat and speed should be very useful for a Chicago team this season that is looking to bounce back and get the team back in the playoffs after kind of trading their core and losing Wilson Contreras this offseason.
Yeah, and I guess just to stay in in Chicago, I'm going to have to go with the White Sox, and my pick is Andrew Benintendi. I mean, in my opinion, you know, the White Sox are a very whatever team, and we'll get into that, you know, when we talk about our predictions for the AL and NL. But I think that Andrew Benintendi is an underrated, you know, hitter in general. You know, I don't think too many people are talking about Andrew Benintendi. I do know that I watched him a little bit when he was on the Red Sox, and I actually watched when he hit his first home run on TV. It was just a random Red Sox game. But I think that being back, you know, in somewhere like the, like, you know, Chicago, I think it's he's going to have the ability to really just shine and bring that, I guess, value back to his name. So I'm really excited to see what happens with Benintendi. I wouldn't be surprised if he shines. I wouldn't be surprised if probably gets traded or something, you know, bring in more prospects for the White Sox. But I'm really excited to see what Benintendi does this year.
Yeah, we'll definitely get into our opinions of the White Sox when we get into our breakdown of what we think of each team. Heading over to Pittsburgh with the Pittsburgh Pirates, their DH first baseman acquisition in Carlos Santana is definitely an underrated move. I personally love Carlos Santana. I think he did fantastic when he was with Cleveland. He went over to Kansas City and did the same exact thing. I believe he went back to Cleveland and did the same thing. He went over and got traded to Seattle, and then now he found a home on a one-year deal in Pittsburgh that some are calling a mistake, but I definitely don't see it as that. However, StatCast seems to back up their optimism that it was a bad deal. Santana owned the second-largest difference among first basemen in expected to actual 2022 stats, behind what one player you already mentioned, I believe, Ryan Mooncastle. That's to say he was unlucky and should have been an above average performer at the plate. He will still likely get some reps at first base, and he's defends still pretty well. He's likely going to see a fair share of time at DH slot because the only other DH people they have really he's gonna kind of play first base and bounce back and forth is with G-Man Choi and Connor Joe. FanGraph projections aren't nearly as optimistic on Santana, but even then, he's still worth the $7 million for the veteran presence in the clubhouse and what he's going to provide to that ball club. I do see him defending better and being a better first baseman than G-Man Choi. So we'll see where Pittsburgh slides him in the lineup, but he's definitely a bat that we are going to see there every single day. And I believe it's a guy that's going to continue to age well like he has, and keep an eye out for Carlos Santana in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, and, you know, being a switch hitter definitely helps him out a lot. They lost switch hitter in Josh Bell a couple years back, so I think that, and I know they also have, oh my God, I'm going to completely freeze on his name. Brian Reynolds. But obviously with Brian Reynolds wanting to leave, and all of that little fiasco that's going on, I think that it probably helps, you know, having that veteran presence for sure.
Right. And it's a guy, too, that he may even help O'Neill Cruz develop a little bit more, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And now going into the Guardians, he's a pending free agent, Amed Rosario, shortstop. I mean, this guy's, I would say that he's probably one of the, like, definition of underrated. The last three full seasons, he supplied a league average offense with OPS plus marks from 100 to 106. He has elite speed. And in the two seasons with Cleveland, he's stolen 31 bases with 22 home runs, 51 doubles, 15 triples, which is insane. He's actually the only player in that span with at least 20 home runs, 50 doubles, and 10 triples, and 30 steals. So this guy's definitely just special. He's definitely going to be the definition. He is the definition of hustle. And so if you're someone that you know really needs, if your team is someone that really needs that hustle and, you know, that mentorship, I think that he's definitely going to be a sought after free agent. I think he's still going to be underrated. I mean, if and when he hits the free agent market, but I'm definitely excited to see what he has to do. Yeah, I think he also went off when we played that. What was it? The Little League World Series, not tournament, a Little League World Series game. Yeah. He played against the Angels, and I think he went like 3-for-3 with like a home run and a triple or something like that.
Right.
So he's definitely super excited to watch, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Continuing on here with the Milwaukee Brewers, one player to highlight going into the 2023 season is outfielder Tyrone Taylor. This guy here must drive Brewers fans crazy. Last year, his OPS marks by month were 547 in April, 872 in May, 573 in June, 849 in July, 588 in August, and 913 in September/October, which is quite a ride. By year's end, Taylor was sharing the center field spot with prospect Garrett Mitchell, and in 2023, he's probably going to be more like a right fielder after Hunter Renfro's departure to the Los Angeles Angels. So why are we highlighting Taylor here? Well, when you add it all up, his 748 OPS over the last two seasons is identical to that of recent touted Toronto trade that acquired them Dalton Varsho. Taylor logged that while playing most of his innings in center field. Last season, he was worth the same number of OAA, 5, as 2021 Gold Glove winner Michael A. Taylor. The Brewers' Taylor also rated in the 80th percentile in sprint speed last year. His performance might be maddening, but if he could somehow avoid some of those dramatic down months, there's a lot to work with there. So when you're looking at a team like the Brewers, who are kind of right in the middle of the pack, they're in the National League, a team that's on the fence, could make the playoffs. Wouldn't be shocked if they didn't. Tyrone Taylor is definitely one of those guys that could be an everyday guy in the Brewers lineup coming this season.
Yeah, and just to end out the Central, I don't have too much on Jorge Polanco, but for the Twins, I have Jorge Polanco. I think he's just overall, just underrated in general. His defense isn't going to be... his defense is whatever, in my opinion, but his pop in the bat, I think, is what really sticks out, and he has great discipline, and I think that he just really got unlucky this last season in 2022 with some of the balls that he hit, but I believe he's a switch hitter, and so I think he's really going to flourish, especially with the lineup. Now, I guess bringing back Carlos Correa and, healthy Byron Buxton, I think that's definitely going to be a fun, little lineup to play in. So, yeah, I'm really excited to see what Jorge Polanco does.
Yeah. Moving on to the St. Louis Cardinals, I have picked left fielder Tyler O'Neill. He's a pretty underrated player in that lineup, having reigning MVP Paul Goldschmidt, Nolan Arenado, and Wilson Contreras. O'Neill is a fast runner and an above-average defender who should hit a lot better in 2022. O'Neill's batted ball data suggests he was hovering back and forth between league average when his actual performance at the plate was awful for the majority of the season. He turned things around the last couple of months, showing signs that he is the 20 home run, 20 stolen base threat that he was long regarded to be. With the rule changes being quite favorable to his stolen base threats, if O'Neill can get on base a little bit more, walks, gets singles, just gets on base, he could turn those singles into a double or get in scoring position much more quickly than you might expect. And having those bigger guys in Nolan Arenado, Paul Goldschmidt drive him in and bring home some runs for the Cardinals this upcoming season. And I think the rule changes helping the runners out a little bit, how many times pitchers can throw over, even the shift. I think Tyler O'Neill's a guy that's going to benefit pretty decently from this, and we'll see a lot more stolen bases out of it for O'Neill and the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess kind of going into our favorite division, the AL West, for the A's, I got Seth Brown. He's 30 years old. He posted a 116 OPS plus while leading the team in home runs, which was 25, RBIs, which is 73 this last year. He was about a bit of a late bloomer, but he's had two straight 20 home run seasons. He's able to play the outfield as well as first base. And, you know, even though he's 30 years old, he's still posting a 900 OPS. And the last month of the 2022 season, he posted a 120 OPS plus with 30 home runs. He posted a 120 OPS plus, and I think that, you know, hitting 30 home runs next season is definitely going to be the goal, and I don't think it's far away from him, for him as a goal. And I think that he's definitely going to be one of those guys that we're just going to hate to see, you know, as Angels fans, that he's going to be the next Marcana, the next
Ramon Laureano,
which that guy acts like he's it's game seven of the World Series every single time he plays the Angels. So I want to say I'm excited to see him, but as an Angels fan, kind of scared to see what Seth Brown does. And if I remember correctly, Seth Brown was the one, was the guy that hit that home run off Raisel Iglesias. That kind of sparked the losing streak for us. So, yeah.
Yeah. Moving things over to the NL West, Colorado. When looking at the Rockies, I think they have a few underrated players, actually. When you're looking at Brendan Rodgers and Ryan McMahon and CJ Cron, Brendan Rodgers is hurt right now and could miss some significant time heading into the season. So, but debating between McMahon and CJ Cron, I went ahead and went with the better defender of the two. And I'm looking for Rockies fans to watch infielder Ryan McMahon. Previous to McMahon, the Rockies used to have a pretty good third baseman in Nolan Arenado, who we mentioned with Tyler O'Neill there in the last pick. When Arenado was traded to the Cardinals prior to the 2021 season, McMahon assumed the hot corner in Colorado. And while he's not going to win 10 straight Golden Gloves like Nolan Arenado did, McMahon has proved himself as a really good defender. Over the last two seasons, he ranks third in OAA with 19 at third base, behind only Ke'Bryan Hayes with 30 and Arenado with 25. McMahon's offense numbers are nothing to write home about. They come out to roughly league average, but when you deliver on defense the way he has, it provides a high floor. To that point, McMahon's total WAR over the last 2 years is 5.5 as calculated by FanGraphs, ranks 11th among third basemen, just ahead of the 4.9 mark posted by former Rockies infielder DJ LeMahieu in a similar number of games played. I'm looking for the Rockies to kind of hover around where they've been the last season. I think McMahon may help get helped a little bit by the rule changes as well, and I think we'll see McMahon on base a little bit more. And he could be – I think he's going to be league average or right maybe slightly above. I know a lot of people are going to add that Coors Field effect into it, and I know that high elevations he'll probably bat a little bit better at home than on the road. But Rockies fans should be excited about McMahon this season.
Yeah, and going to someone that I have to admit, yeah, I'm kind of scared for, just because I always have something to say about the Mariners. And honestly, as an Angels fan, man, I'm absolutely scared of George Kirby. That dude was absolutely disgusting. He was perfect to start, you know, start the season. And, I mean, he did struggle at the end of the year. I think that it was just one of those things where, you know, people kind of just figured him out, which, I mean, was bound to happen. But I do remember I watched maybe one or two of his starts, or I remember watching some sort of highlights of his. This dude's absolutely scary, and I am absolutely scared as an Angels fan to see what happens. And, you know, having someone like Luis Castillo, you know, as a teammate, that's not going to help us. But he's still expected to have a WOBA. That's going to put him between, you know, with guys like Joe Musgrove and his teammate Luis Castillo. So, like I said, it's one of those things where I'm very scared. I'm sure Mike Trout isn't. He's not scared of anyone. But yeah, I want to say I'm excited, but I can't. I don't want to.
And only to add on to that, he's still really young. He's heading into his 25 his age 25 season. He's only going to continue to grow and get better with the leadership from guys like Luis Castillo and Robbie Ray and those guys that have been around the block a time or two. So I think he's going to be a nice piece in there with that Mariners pitching staff, definitely. And the Angels fans and the Angels better read up on the scouting reports and get ready, because this is one guy that you can't just be like, hey, we're going to take him tonight. So you got to show up when this guy's pitching to compete for sure. Moving over to the desert and the Arizona Diamondbacks, they have quickly become one of the favorites and the best teams to follow in baseball just due to their young and controllable talent they've stockpiled over the past few seasons with trades. Things are definitely looking up in Arizona. There are a lot of players that we could have put in this list, but we're going to focus on one that has received not a lot of attention, and that's outfielder Jake McCarthy. McCarthy debuted in 2021 and didn't show much in less than 100 plate appearances, which is a pretty small sample size to begin with. However, in 2022, McCarthy played 99 games and really began to showcase his potential of being a good big leaguer. He's one of the many incredibly fast members of this team and was in the 98th percentile for sprint speed. His bat-to-ball ability was all steady as he regularly put the ball in play all over the field and finished the year with a .283 batting average and 354 plate appearances. McCarthy may not be one of the focal points of this team, but his elite speed plus his hitting tool will continue to make him a valuable piece to the Diamondbacks. At the very least, he's an elite fourth outfielder for Arizona and has the ability to grow into a little bit more. He should continue to develop as a hitter and build on his quality first in a real in season. But his floor as a speed contact guy is very high, regardless of the fact. The Diamondbacks are looking up. They have a young team. They're ready to compete, and they're coming out of that rebuild in what's a very tough division in the NL West with the other few teams they've got in there. Things are looking up in Arizona, and McCarthy is just one of the bright players to highlight there.
Yeah, and I think that going into someone that I wouldn't necessarily say he's underrated in the sense of his career, but I think that he's underrated because of his new contract and the fact that he's with a new team, which is Corey Seager. I think that, you know, being paid $300 million puts a lot of weight on you. And I know just from being an Angels fan alone that he definitely struggled a lot. I think he was batting less than like 200 for a while. And so he definitely struggled a bit, but I think that towards the end of the season is when he really, picked up and ramped it up. And we played, what was it, Kyle? I don't know if you remember, but I think we played the Rangers every other day. Yeah. I think our series with them ended super early. I think it ended in like early August or something like that, because I think we played them so much.
Yeah, I think we played them so much in the first half of the season, and I think by August we were done with them for the season.
Which, thank God. It didn't help that this was only the second year that we'd ever seen the new ballpark for the Rangers. So right. There was definitely a lot of issues that I think a lot of people weren't kind of aware with. So I think that, thank God, I think we got all of the Rangers home games out of the way in like May. Right. So I think we only had like two or three in August. Otherwise, it probably would have ended in like June or July, which I probably would have been happy with. But right.
And I'm glad to see the continuing with the rule changes. We play the division less, so we'll just see even less of these guys this year.
But kind of just to go back on Corey Seager, Statcast does suggest that he's going to have a better batting average, 38 points higher than his actual 245 average that he had. He whiffs more than he probably should, and I think that he's definitely swinging out a lot of pitches that he shouldn't. And he kind of reminds me a little bit of on the swinging in the sense of like the whiff rate per se of, I think, a Cody Bellinger. I think that Corey Seager was kind of just swinging at a lot of different things, at almost everything, I felt like. And I think that it was just one of those things where, you know, I think he just really wanted to live up to that $300 million contract, and I think he was just doing too much. I think that towards the end of the season is when he was just like, all right, let me just relax, and let me just, you know, do my thing that he normally does. Yeah.
Right. Hopefully it's one of those things where he's trying to live up to the $300 million contract and not go, I got $300 million. I'm going to do whatever I want. Even if I don't perform, I'm still going to get that money. Moving off of a $30 million player per season and moving on to a $3 million player per season with the San Francisco Giants infielder Thairo Estrada. Estrada was let go by the Yankees in early 2021 when they acquired Rougned Odor. Estrada was then picked up by the Giants and had emerged as a solid utility man, with the bulk of his time coming at second base, where he solidified that everyday role. I know they had Tommy La Stella, and he was pretty much on the IL most of his stint there in San Francisco. Estrada was one of those among those with at least 300 plate appearances as a second baseman last year. Estrada's 725 OPS at the position ranked ninth. He had 38 extra base hits, only 8 fewer than all-star Andrés Giménez of the Guardians. Estrada was also in the 75th percentile in sprint speed and 76 in OAA. So we're expecting Thairo Estrada to only continue to develop in where in San Francisco. In San Francisco, they have one of those developmental staffs and their staff in general, very good at developing guys, getting them better. They get the best and the most out of all of their players. Anybody goes to San Francisco and you're thinking they're going to turn their career around, and a lot of them guys do. So Thairo Estrada is one to watch out for in San Francisco this year.
All I got to say is that Tommy La Stella trade still probably goes down as one of the worst trades in recent Angels history.
Yeah.
Now, I don't care what anyone says. Still now one of the Mariner. Dumbest trades that Billy Epler has ever done. I hated everyone that fought me back then. It was like 3 years ago, 34 years ago. I'm still pissed about that. Everyone on Twitter was fighting me. I don't care. He was a good player. We should have kept him.
Yeah, there's a lot of trades that the Angels have done that you just throw question marks up in the air. You're like, what the heck? There was a couple of them last season, too.
Not to go on a rant, but I think that one definitely in recent history, in the last 6, 7 years, 8 years that I've really, really kept with the Angels, that probably has to go down as one of the dumbest.
Anyways. I think that one, and I think Manassian lost some brain cells in the race to Iglesias trade with the Braves too.
Yeah, I don't know what that was about.
I think that.
But then
I think
again, that Iglesias was having way too many issues. But I mean, yeah. he was still nice. Anyways, so that's the point. Going into the Astros, I have Christian Javier, which I wouldn't say he's completely underrated, but I think that I'm going to give him the underrated status simply because he lived in the shadow of Justin Verlander and Framber Valdez, and also, obviously, Garcia. So I think that Christian Javier is going to be one of those guys that is really going to, you know, step it up now that, you know, Justin Verlander isn't there. He did finish the season with 11 wins and 9 losses. He had a 2.54 ERA with a 0.95 whip, 194 strikeouts, and 148 innings. He didn't receive a single Cy Young vote. He's only 25 years old, and he in the world in the ALCS he had a he pitched 5 innings, 1 hit, zero earned runs, 3 walks, and 5 Ks. And in the World Series, he had 6 innings pitched, 0 hits, 0 runs, 2 walks, and 9 Ks. And if I remember correctly, I believe he was the starting pitcher for that no-hitter, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So it was just one of those things. But definitely super interested to see how it plays out now that, you know, Justin Verlander isn't there.
Moving on to Los Angeles and the Los Angeles Dodgers. When you think of the Dodgers, you mean, man, who's underrated on the Dodgers? They got Mookie Betts. They got Freddie Freeman. They have Walker Buehler, who's going to be out this season, I know. And they have Clayton Kershaw. One of the guys who has been there and has become a core guy in their lineup is catcher Will Smith. Trey Turner's gone now, so I would probably argue Will Smith is just as important guy in that lineup right after Betts and Freeman, so he's probably third in there. As far as importance level in the lineup on the team, he may be even more. He's a guy that is more important than either one of those guys, as Betts and Freeman, because of his defense on the side of the ball. Their ERA has been really good over the last year, and he's been the common factor of it. Now, he's not going to catch every single day. No catcher does. I believe they have Austin Barnes there. He's the dude behind the plate that's going to work the pitching staff. He's very, very good at watching a pitching staff. I got to see Will Smith come up through the minor leagues a little bit, and when he's got it, he's got it. He moved up fairly quickly through the rankings. Plus, when you have a catcher that can swing the bat like Will does, and who can handle things on both sides of the plate, he's definitely underrated. He's a very good offensive player. He's got power, nice, short, compact swing. We've even seen him get some big hits and big RBIs. I know he had a nice hit in the WBC the other day. Defensive side, we'll just keep talking about the pitchers. The Dodgers have a nice staff there. He handles them perfectly. There's a tandem there that has to be considered their success with the dude behind the plate in Will Smith. Definitely a durable, fantastic hitting catcher. And that's probably the next star the Dodgers should be looking at signing up long-term is Will Smith for sure.
Yeah, and I don't think he's one of those players where, like, super underrated, no one knows his name, because obviously right. people know his name.
Right.
But I think he's underrated in the sense that not enough people talk about him.
Right.
And I guess the best way to put it is that, for example, on the WBC, the Team USA roster, I think that if we didn't have JT and Will Smith was our catcher, our main catcher, I wouldn't complain. I'd be like, okay, cool. I trust that he would be able to manage the pitching staff. And you know, the backup of Kyle Higashioka, I think that, you know, that those two would be awesome. He's not one of those guys where it's like, I don't know what he's gonna do. Like, he might be able to handle him, he might not, but I think that Will Smith is definitely someone that doesn't get talked about enough.
Yeah.
And I think he actually is batting third in the Dodgers lineup. So he's definitely, you know, getting that importance role in a sense.
Yeah, he definitely has a significant role on the team, and I think we also don't hear enough about him because of the other guys they have in Betts, in Freeman, in Kershaw. The lights are on them, but he quietly goes about his work, and he gets it done for sure.
Yeah, and then talking about probably one of our favorite guys for the Angels, I have Patrick Sandoval. Kind of just to go off literally what happened 2 days ago in the U.S.-Mexico game, he was absolutely lights out. And it's funny because now that I'm reading all these articles, these the videos and stuff like that, they're saying, or now they're saying, you know, the Angels obviously now have pitching. The Angels obviously, yes, obviously Patrick Sandoval was very young a couple years ago, whenever, but he's been pretty good for us. I think it's just the fact that he was young, and I think that he obviously just needed to learn. But the fact that he was basically able to shut down completely a Team USA with a full, you know, all-stars, and half of them probably being Hall of Famers, and the fact that he's not, you know, people aren't talking about him, and they weren't until obviously this WBC matchup, there, everyone's all like, oh my god, Patrick Sandoval, like, I learned so much about him. Like, no, you didn't. You guys did not know about Patrick Sandoval. But this last season, he did have a 2.91 ERA, 151 strikeouts, which is a career high, and 149 innings with a 3.09 FIP, 1.34 WHIP, and over the last 2 months of the season, he had a 1.83 ERA. A 1.83 ERA. He tossed a four-hit shutout against the Tigers for the first complete game of his career. And now he's going to be pitching he's probably going to be our number three pitcher behind, obviously, Ohtani and Tyler Anderson. But I think that he's definitely going to be someone who's going to shine. And he's really going to show off for this very special Angels team that we have.
Yeah. Kind of just adding on to that, I believe Phil Nevin came out and Patrick Sandoval is going to be our number two. And if you have not yet, if you have not checked out our first episode, you can go back in there because we made some predictions in that episode, and almost all of them were true. I was very high on Patrick Sandoval. I said he was going to get to Trout. He got to Trout. Jose said that they were going to lose by 5-plus runs. They did. They got blown out by Mexico. So if you haven't listened to our first episode, there's a little bit of teaser. Go ahead and go back and listen to that one. And Lance Lynn. I was high on Lance Lynn. I've been high on Lance Lynn. Look what he did for USA last night. Moving on to another team that is full of stars down in San Diego, a guy that people may think he's overrated, is pitcher Josh Hader. He does not suck. I know he had his ups and downs last season. Entering the year, he was the best closer in the league. And I think it's safe to say that's no longer the case. Because last season he was just abysmal, right? He finished last year with a 5.22 ERA in that split with the Brewers and being traded over to the Padres. Hader actually started the last season without allowing a single run through April and May, which definitely goes without being seen because of what he did the rest of the season. He continued to dominate in every single way in his elite strikeout numbers and whiff rate that made him top-tier closer that he's always been. He came back down to earth in June but remained an elite closer nonetheless. I think once the deal with San Diego came about is when he started to kind of falter a little bit, when they shipped him to San Diego for a part of a deal with four players. So the Padres could shore up their late innings of that bullpen to make a playoff push. Things only got worse. He came over with a lot of excitement and looked strong in his first two games with the Padres. Then he failed to maintain this as he allowed three runs or more in three separate occasions for the Padres. And he looked like a shell of his former self at times, but fell off back and forth. Due to the limited innings, Hader finished August with a 19.06 ERA, easily the worst over any month of his career. He actually settled in very well in September, looking more like himself when he was placed in fewer high-leverage situations. He finished the season off in excellent in the postseason, where he allowed zero runs and earned four saves during the Padres' playoff run. I would like to compare this dude a little bit to Raisel Iglesias. If you put this man because we were Angel fans, we kind of saw what he did. If you put this man into a situation when it's not a safe situation, he's probably gonna shit the bed. But if you go him in there and give him those lockdown innings and those high leverage situations, he's one of the guys that is going to get the job done 9 in and 9 out. So I think he's going to have a bounce back year for San Diego. As a Padre fan, I would not be worried. He's not going to do what he did last year. He's been consistent over the years, so it's not like he's going to come out and have a 19.06 ERA. So if when you're looking at San Diego, he's going to be one of the core guys that they're going to be looking at, and a guy that everybody should be looking for in this Padre roster this upcoming season for sure.
Yeah. And before we end, actually, just as Angels fans, I want you to give me someone that you think is underrated or you think that underrated or someone that you're excited to kind of see this next season. Obviously, we're not talking about like Rendon and things like that, but, you know, someone younger-ish or whatever that you're kind of excited to see this next season.
Yeah, and if you're not a fan of the Angels, whatever your team is, what guy you think is going to go underrated for your team this year, we'd love to hear all your feedback and kind of battle with you a little bit on who's going to be good and who's not going to be good, who's underrated and who's overrated in our predictions.
Oh, no, I was asking you.
Oh, me? I was talking about everybody. Me, as Angel fans, I think this guy is going to go underrated just on the fact that everybody loved him and then he had a terrible year last year. I'm going to go with David Fletcher. I think a lot of people went on him as they were kind of off the Fletcher train for a while there. And I think
because he was hurt. Yeah.
Yeah. He was hurt. When he came back, he wasn't really good at all. I know he made some errors on the defensive side of things. And I know they went and got Urshela and Drury and things like that this offseason to kind of shore up the middle infield. But I still think Fletcher's going to be a guy that's going to come back and prove what he did. I also wouldn't even be shocked if we see a trade before opening day, kind of shipping one of our infielders off, because we have Velasquez, we have Renjifo, we have Fletcher, we have Urshela, we have Drury. We don't need, not all of those guys are going to make the roster.
We have Lamb.
Sure. Yeah, we have Lamb. A lot of those guys aren't going to make the roster. So I don't see guys like.
But I think a lot of them can play the outfield though.
Right. Yeah. I know when we saw Drury is going to play some first base, or even Urshela was going to play some first base,
because I
see Walsh there.
Because I know Fletcher could play the outfield.
Mm-hmm.
Drury, I believe, could play the outfield. Walsh could play the outfield. Walsh, I didn't even know he could.
We threw Velasquez out in center field this spring already.
I didn't know that. I didn't see that.
Yeah, we threw him out in center
definitely
field.
I wouldn't trust Velasquez in the outfield, but I think almost all of them. I think the only one that can't play the outfield is Jake Lamb, I think.
Yeah, Lamb can play in the outfield.
I didn't even know we had him.
Yeah. He's come out swinging this spring, though. He's had a very nice spring thus far.
I think for me, and it sucks that... So my original pick would have been Mickey Moniak.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a tough situation.
But I don't think he's going to get any playing time because of the fact that we have Ward, obviously Trout, and we have Renfro, which my pick is actually Ward.
Mm-hmm.
Which is crazy because Ward has been up and down the minors for, oh man, I think I remember him hitting a walk-off home run back in 2018 to end the season, I believe. And yeah. By then, he had already been up and down the league, I think probably 2-3 years. And so for me, it was kind of weird because, you know, obviously as Angels fans, and I think fans of any team, I think that when you see one guy keep going up and down, you're like, let's just get rid of this guy already. That's my opinion on Adele, but...
That's my opinion on Matt Theis.
But, well, okay, but Matt Theis, I was on that train. But Matt Theis, I think that now that he's learned catcher, he has some value to him now.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that I've gotten off the trade Theis chain.
Yeah. I was also over the Jose Rojas experiment, and he's not on the team anymore, but I really loved him because he was an Anaheim native dude, infielder. I was definitely off the Jose Rojas train too as well.
Oh, wait, I didn't even know he was gone.
Yeah, we released him this offseason.
Well, I guess you learned something new.
Yeah.
But besides the point, I think that Taylor Ward was just one of those guys where I was never mad that we never – like that we never released him. It was one of those things where I think that because our outfield was always pretty stacked-ish, because we had Upton, we had Trout, and then we had a random right or left
fielder. We had Calhoun. Calhoun was there a hot
man. Well, yeah, but then after he left, we just had random
right
fielders for the most part. And I think that it was the fact that he just never got playing time.
Right.
And I think that this was probably his first real full season. This last
year. Yeah.
And he got a new hitting coach, like a private hitting coach that helped him. And he was better than Trout the first like 2 months. And I think that, what was it, Phillips, I think, is using the same coach.
Yeah.
That Ward is using. So I think that Ward is definitely going to be someone very special to look at. I know he struggled after his injury.
Running into the wall.
He grew out that hair this off season, that spring training. So hopefully that the hair growth helps him out. But I think that just sticking with that new hitting coach is definitely going to help him out. But if we didn't have the outfield situation, I think my pick would have been Mickey Moniak. I think that Mickey Moniak is one of those guys that Mickey Moniak to the Phillies is probably the way we see Adele. And I think that they were probably happy to get rid of him because he was a first round pick and his career average was like 125 or 150 or something like that.
Right.
And so for some reason, for me personally, I still see the hype in him. And I think that he just never got the playing time. Same thing with Ward. The issue for me, the difference with Adele is that he has had the playing time. Is that I think he got almost all of 2020, which was only 60 games, but still, he got almost all of 2020. And it's just the fielding was atrocious. There were so many issues with Adele. But
yeah,
I think that
I'm currently off that Adele train already. I'm already off of it. It's just laughable, the defense at some points. Yes, he's a spring training hero. He comes out the last couple of years in spring training. He's in his first at-bat. He's homeward. The dude just cannot put it together. I think the ship has sailed. I would have traded him a while ago. I like the mini.
He has no value anymore.
Yeah, he doesn't. And I do like the Mickey Moniak thing. I do think he's an underrated guy. I did like that Noah Syndergaard trade because it was a guy who probably wasn't going to come back anyway. And so getting Logan Ohapi and Moniak in that trade was very nice value that we got back.
Marsh. I was kind of upset with Marsh, but Marsh was struggling.
Right.
So I think that's what everyone was saying.
Right.
But I think that it's just our coaches, because I know Marsh said that when he went to Philly, that they were like that the coaches were so much better.
Right.
But
the problem I see with the Mickey Moniak thing right now is, and I know Phil Nevin has said the best players are going to play, I still think Phillips gets the fourth outfield spot, and I think we see Moniak and Adele to start the season in AAA. I know that he just needs to get at bats, but this so far this spring, Moniak has earned a spot on the roster, and if the best players are going to play, Moniak should get the spot, but I still think right now it's Brett Phillips' spot to lose.
I think it's Phillips just because of the defense. Obviously, yeah. It's not going to be because of the hitting.
Right.
I mean, he did get that hitting coach with Ward, but I know he's not hitting the hottest in spring training, and he's probably not going to be a 300 guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the defense is going to, I mean, that's why Billy Hamilton is still in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Hamilton could hit 100, but if he still has those wheels and he's still a pretty elite defender, he could never get a hit again.
Right. Just as one of those guys to come in as an eighth, ninth inning replacement guy, get on, steal a couple of bags, and yeah.
Again, I would want it to be Mickey Moniak, but I can't choose him just because I don't think he's just going to get the playing time, and one of the guys would have to get hurt, which obviously you never want to wish someone gets hurt, but I don't know.
Yeah.
But
just a little bit further in that, I think I know we had like five core guys in our rotation be like, okay, we know who these five are. And that sixth starter, we're like, we need to sign another pitcher. We need to sign another guy. I think that sixth rotation spot is kind of like, it's becoming a real competition between Griffin Canning, Chase Silseth, and Tucker Davidson. I think, and Tucker Davidson has had a nice spring so far.
I didn't see his start yesterday.
Today.
Yeah, so Silseth was today. I think Davidson was yesterday. I like both of them.
Yeah, I do too.
I think Davidson, Silseth, and Canning, are all really special guys. I think they're not going to give it to him just because he's still really young.
Yeah.
And if they do give it to him, I think that they're gonna treat him like Berea. They're going to throw him into the bullpen, which I don't think Berea should have been in the bullpen, and I think he should have still got his playing time. But, I mean, Berea is a pretty good bullpen guy. Obviously, he eats innings. But I don't think Canning's going to get it just because he's coming off injury. He wasn't the hottest when he was healthy anyways. So
I would like to see Canning... Probably, I mean, I don't think he's going to. I would like to see Canning take that Berea role in the bullpen. I would like to see Canning do there. There's a lot of guys too that they are trying to get stretched out as starters or become starters that I think would be better in the bullpen. Just like Chris Rodriguez, he's want to be a starter. They're pushing him to be a starter. I think the dude needs to be in high leverage situation. Same thing with Bachman. I just think those guys.
Ben Joyce is going to be. He's going to be there.
Yeah. So I just think there's some guys there that they want to be starters. Berea still wants to be a starter, but I think their role is a bullpen. And going off of Ben Joyce too, the dude needs to be on the opening day roster. This dude's ready now.
Which I think I will bet anyone $100 he's not going to be on the opening day roster.
You don't think so?
I don't think they're going to give it to him, and I don't think they're going to give it to him because of the fact that he's young.
I like him better than Estevez right now.
I mean, that is true, but I don't think we could. I don't think you could send Estevez to the minor leagues.
I think with all no, Estevez is going to be in the bullpen. But I think with how shaky and unstable the bullpen is, when you have a guy that's bringing that heat, dude's throwing 105 miles an hour. I think you have. If you can throw heat, we can work with that. I think this guy needs to be in the bullpen.
I mean, that is true, but I don't want a Brustall Graterol from the Dodgers where this guy could throw 600 miles an hour, but he has no command whatsoever.
Right, right.
So, yeah. I mean, I get it, but I personally don't think he's going to – I think we think he's going to open the opening day roster just because I feel like – I don't know who makes that decision.
Phil and Perry will just sit down together and pick a roster.
I think Phil's gonna
put Joyce on this team. I think he cracks the roster. Especially the bullpen is so shaky, it's so unstable. That's the biggest question mark for me heading into the season. What's the bullpen gonna do? And our rotation, we have four dogs in that rotation, and Ohtani, Sandoval, Anderson, and Detmers. I'm really loving Reed Detmers, what he's done this spring too. He's looking a little like Clayton Kershaw out there. People better watch out. He's gonna take that spot.
Yeah, so I mean, we'll see. This is definitely, I think this is definitely the most exciting. I think if you really break down the Angels, I think that they're a very exciting team that no one's talking about because no one wants to talk about us in a good light.
It's always the same questions every year. Otani's leaving. We're wasting Trout. Rendon's hurt. Yeah.
But I think that if you really just break it down, we have a lot of options. They're young options, but they're options.
Right. I'm going to go on a limb here and say I know we were just talking about the bullpen. I still think we could add another arm into that bullpen via free agency or trade still. I'm not putting it past Perry to do that. There is a guy like Zach Britton. He's still out there. Nobody signed him yet. Or make a trade. I know there's a couple of teams looking for infielders. We have six of them. And we know right now it's not going to be Drury. We know it's not going to be Urshela. So Renjifo, Velasquez, or Fletcher might get dealt for a reliever.
I think, I think yours was a hot take saying Fletcher, especially because I think everyone thinks Fletcher's going to get traded.
Yeah. Listen to me. This is my hot take. If an infielder does get traded, I'm saying right now it's going to be Luis Renjifo.
I wouldn't doubt it.
And I can see this is if looking into my crystal ball, they're going to get a call from the Dodgers, and we're going to trade Luis Renjifo, and we're going to get Brustall Graterol for Renjifo.
I don't think their value is the same.
I just think I think Renjifo could get more playing time with the Dodgers, and he could be an everyday player. They don't. And I think Brustall Graterol is in a place where he needs to see a change of scenery. And I think even if they throw in another guy, a minor leaguer with Graterol, I still think Graterol has some in there. I know there's talk he's going to be their closer. I don't think he's good enough to be a closer right now. He's still a bit shaky. But I wouldn't be shocked if that happens.
I would say saying that Renjifo is going to get traded isn't a hot take, but I say saying that he's going to get traded to the Dodgers, I think that's a hot take.
Yeah.
Then again, technically, we already traded him to the Dodgers a few years back.
Yeah, we traded him for Ross Stripling and Jock Peterson. Our fabulous owner. Yeah, we'll get into that too. Holy cow.
I think definitely someone's going to get traded. I think someone's going to get released and someone's going to get traded. I think Lamb's going to get released.
He's performed better than Walsh too right now. Walsh went deep
Walsh
today.
Walsh just barely came back though.
Yeah, Walsh went deep today. He had a 2-run home run today.
That we have to have depth for when someone does go down.
Triple A
because Rendon's sure. Probably going to go down. Walsh is probably going to go down. So having Lamb and Urshela or whoever else. Drury, which I personally think that Drury and Urshela should probably be our starters over Renjifo and
I completely agree.
I don't think Fletcher or Renjifo should be starters, in my opinion.
I think Brandon Drury is going to be the opening day second baseman. I think that's where he's at opening day. And it's going to be a toss-up. You're either going to throw Fletcher there or Renjifo at shortstop. I think Urshela probably doesn't get the opening day nod because I think Rendon and Walsh play. But Urshela is going to be there in there a lot, too, I think.
Yeah. I'm sure we could probably do a whole other thing.
We could do a whole episode just on the Angels.
Just on the Angels alone, for sure. But yeah. So that was our most underrated, underappreciated, I guess most exciting players to check out this next season that's coming up. So definitely tell us who you think is underrated on your team, and tell us if you think anyone that we said is overrated.
We'll see you guys soon with our next episode. We got some predictions coming in hot. The WBC is still going strong. There's been some upsets. There's been some really good games. So we'll dive deep into all that in our next episode. Thanks, y'all, for tuning in.
Yeah, absolutely. See y'all, guys.
Cheers.